Hi there, I'm Anne-Marie McQueen, editor of Live Healthy, and this is the Live Healthy podcast. Each week we interview health and wellness leaders and talk about all the things that are good for you, which you can also read about in our online magazine, the only one of its kind for men and women in the UAE.
Today I'm speaking with Alawa Gaham, a yoga instructor, director of Yoga Levy Studio on the Palm Jumeirah in Dubai, a well-being influencer, and an advocate for mental health. In honor of Movember, we speak about why men have a hard time admitting they are having a hard time, how showing vulnerability is the opposite of weakness, and how simply taking the time to breathe can make all the difference in a moment of stress or panic. Okay, hello, and we have a lot to talk about because it's November, it's the month. Yeah. You know, it started with prostate cancer, but it's gone on to be suicide prevention and men's mental health. And you've been doing a lot. You have a lot of stuff coming up. So first off, you've just given a talk to the Ministry of Health about intimidation. Can you talk about that a little bit? Intimidation, and what do you mean?
Yeah, it was not specifically about intimidation. It was about mental health and what is the mental health for men, basically. And so I decided to highlight this point of intimidation because this is what I feel being the main topic. Because, you see, a lot of men, I won't say all the men, but a lot of men, they could feel that... let's say, I don't see the name in English. When you actually reveal the fact that you've been depressed, or when you actually accept the fact that you are anxious and you suffer from anxiety, makes you a little bit less man, but less viral, or remove a certain part of your masculinity. Because, you know, we all know in the unconscious, the image of the man, it's the unbreakable superhero who needs to support a family, have no problems, you know, like more based on the financial aspect to provide. The man is a provider, you know. So this removing a little bit the sentimental or emotional aspects. And for many, many years, I guess it's probably a legacy from wars and all these things, maybe from Europe. Men, it's not allowed to see weakness or to show weakness. And basically, when you start telling that you experience an episode of depression, an experience of anxiety, it kind of make you look weak. So this is what I wanted to highlight, which is not true. It has nothing to do with weakness. It's not because you are depressed, it's not because you feel anxious, or it's not because you are not at your best of your mental sanity or mental health that means that you are weak. It could mean that you are vulnerable during this part of your life. And it's okay to be vulnerable. I mean, no one's, it's 100% like every day, you know, including men, including superhero. I'm sure even Superman has his time, you know, even Batman, you know.
Moments in the movie. There's always those moments. Why?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has a moment. And I was trying to explain, okay, whatever episode of stress or depression or sadness or fear or anxiety you're facing, the real point is to fight it. So you have to admit it. This is the word actually I was looking for. You have to admit that something wrong, which is the first step of healing it. Then you have to understand why there's something wrong. So you have to reconnect your emotional with your intellect and your connective part of the brain, with the reptilian part of the brain, with all, you know, everything that basically composes the human being. And from that, this is the way to find a solution that will resonate with your condition and make you feel better. Either accept the reality of the past that event happened that you cannot change and you just have to move on. This is usually how sadness and depression are coming. Or accept the uncertitudes of the future. And this is how anxiety is built on. Like, we don't know what tomorrow will be made of, What about the end of the week, the end of the month, the end of the year, in 10 years, especially after this long episode of COVID, which is not even over yet, even if it's getting better. The lockdown, I think, was traumatized for everyone. You know, we all experience it in our own way. So it contributes to the idea that, okay, I'm scared of tomorrow, but it's okay to be scared of tomorrow, you know? You just need to move on from that. And that's what I wanted to share with them. It's not about being scared. It's what, how you're going to use your fear. Fear can be a motivation, can be an inspiration, rather than being something who hold you back or stop you from moving. So this is the main point that I wanted to develop. I really want men in general to feel okay, not to feel okay. See? Like, it's okay. You're having a bad time. You're having a bad day, you're having a crisis, so what do we do now? First, you have to accept it, you have to speak about it, and you will feel better soon. Because like keeping it inside and try to deny it, I'm not sure it will give a positive outcome. I think you're just delaying the explosion of the bomb when you could actually just maybe avoid the explosion by just opening up and try to figure out what's the mechanism inside, you know.
Was it this for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think like everyone have been through hard time. When I did my career switch, yeah, I was definitely not happy. I had an episode of depression, and that's why I went to yoga, because before going to the traditional medical way, I don't think I went to this extent. Maybe yoga helped me right before I dropped or I passed the line. But I was ready to it because I think sometimes it's necessary, because when really the brain goes out of control, it needs medical support. So there's nothing wrong about it. I was ready to do this. But luckily I had yoga who appeared in my life. And I was very successful in my business, but it was not enough. Waking up every morning. So I had 40 shops in Dubai. I was distributing like kids' clothes. I was doing great. The growth of the company was incredible. But I created this company because I love to design, you know, and I was designing a lot of the collection at the beginning. But moving forward, I was dealing with issues every day, issues with the PROs, all the visas of my employees and you know, salary and all this like human resources that takes a lot of time because it has an emotional weight like behind. It's not just figure, it's like human. So you get affected by that. Also, financially, you always need to grow, so you need to start dealing with investment and funds. So it's self pressure. You wonder how big you see the company, the supply chain, the product, the customer service. So I was pretty much at all the stage of the product, from the production, the creation, the selling, the after selling, and I was not creating anymore. So the reason I created the company, I mean, to design and make myself happy doing something artistic and living from it, was like so far away from that. And day after day, after maybe 5-6 years, I figured I was waking up every morning. First thing I was doing is having a cigarette. I like opened my eyes, lighting a cigarette. It was like my life, you know. I felt miserable, really. Coffee, cigarette, sugar, parties, to forget that I'm stressed, waking up every morning, working hard. You know, this like lead me to a heart condition. I almost had a heart attack. I spent like a week in ICU in Lazare Hospital here. And this is what I figured out. Do I really want that? I'm like 30 years old. I need to call the nurse to go to the restrooms. And I'm not happy. I'm deeply depressed. So this is where I made the switch, you know. So I know what it is like to wake up every morning and don't want to wake up. Because this is what depression makes you feel, basically. Nothing has test anymore. You like, your soul is dead, mainly. You're just an incarnated, empty zombie walking, doing things that you should do to keep yourself alive. But there's no enlightenment. There is no excitement. I mean, there is like pleasure in life when you see friends, when you eat. It's good, but it's not happiness, you know. It's like a very momentary part. There's no idea of development. I was not feeling that I was developing myself emotionally, intellectually, or financially, yes, but it was really the only reason, like, why I stayed, no? But still, it wasn't enough. So I made the switch. So, yeah, I've been through that.
How I mean, I have so many men in my life that are going through this, and it's so hard to talk to them if you're on the outside. So how do you talk to someone who's struggling, who you know is struggling? Because I find men just like shut right down if you don't speak to them the right way, or I don't know if there is a right way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. There's no right way. I would say being a man talking to a man for this type of issues might be a little bit easier in terms of accessibility. And being a man who've been through that and telling him it's okay, you don't need to be ashamed. This is the main thing. See, people are ashamed not to be able to fill up the expectation that the imagined people have for them. Like being a superhero, you're a man, you're responsible, you need to provide. You need to, you know, just provide, basically. You know, you don't need to have any emotion rather than just, you know, make sure that everyone is safe. Which is, it's a point, you know, I definitely feel the responsibility of that. But still human being, you know, and still has, any man has a period of doubt, period of incertitude, especially after COVID. You know, we all have this lockdown who like literally fell on our shoulders. We need to redesign our thought, our life, maybe our activities. So the first thing, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay not to be okay. There's nothing bad about it, you know. And it doesn't make you a smaller man. It actually can make you a bigger man if you fight it. But to fight it, you need to accept it. You need to talk about it. I'm not the type of man who make it public, you know. I understand I have my kind of dignity. I don't want to. I don't want people to look at me down on me like, oh, he's depressed. And so I really understand that. But it's not about that. There is no type of consideration this way, you know. Mental health can be a disease, it can be a condition, it can be something that it's not our fault. So we cannot be responsible of that. But we can be responsible of fighting it, accepting it, and moving on forward. So I guess the first thing is that just to say to anyone, men's, but any other, like children, a woman, anyone who experience a highly stressful episode, either of depression or anxiety, it's okay. It's fine. You are normal. Mm-hmm. We all do that. You will have more, like, unfortunately, and you will go out of it, fortunately. So it's just, we're just bringing the camera to this, like, precise moment, and we're zooming. But in a few weeks, in a few months, you'll forget that.
It's crazy to think that men expect only half of the population to struggle with their mental health, right? Like it's
yeah, I think it's hard for men, maybe harder for men to and once again, I think this has to do with the culture, this has to do with the vision, you know, the role or the preset role that we have, where it's okay for a woman to cry, no one will be shocked, but a man to cry, it's not really okay, but at the end of the day, yeah, it could be okay. It's really, I think the culture, the religion, the language, the hierarchy, the barrier, all these parameters that make us a social element of a society, yeah, can actually have a very heavy weight on denying what we're going through. And now I really believe the real strength and the real virility and the real masculinity is to accept your failure and to fix them if you can. I think, because I really think being a coward was actually to deny what you're going through and try to hide it, because you're going to explode at some point. And the damage you're going to make around you will be dramatic when it can actually be fixed. And you can, you know, there's nothing good coming from holding on tension. And even in terms of health, you will increase your oxidative stress, your cell will not be healthy, you will multiply the free radicals inside your body, you will not let go, you will have tension, your muscle will be tight, you will be sore. I'm not even talking about all this degenerative disease that can come along stress. I mean, today we all we all aware about the negative impact of stress, which was not the case 20 years ago. You know, the burnout, for example, have been accepted, I think, less than 10 years ago in terms of company. Like, I'm going through something to the point that I cannot wake up any morning. You know, it's not your fault. It's okay. No, it's not the fault of the company either. I mean, it's our society is like that. So that's why I really believe this is a very good answer now, that the mental health is taking over the world in terms of consideration. So it's very good. And I'm happy that November becomes not only for the prostate depi stage, but also just to have a little time to think, okay, how men can feel better and what can we do as a man or as anyone to make the men around us feel better or to ourselves feel better, you know?
So you have a TED Talk coming out and it's all about using yoga to sort of tackle the, you know, depression, which is looking past, and anxiety, which is it's looking forward. Can you just explain a little bit about what you, first of all, where that TED Talk is and what you see in it? Give us a little preview.
So I actually did the talk 2 weeks ago, but it will be available hopefully within 2 or 3 weeks, you know, by the time they upload it. So it will be available on the TEDx official page of YouTube. So the topic was conquer your fear and uncertitudes. And I explain how yoga deal with depression and anxiety, which is basically the main topic. So yoga means unity of the soul, the mind, and the body. So basically the soul is incarnated, it's like trapped into the body. So that means soul and body are always together. Soul and body follow the present moment. They keep on moving, following the natural flow of time, you know. But mind, it's very powerful. So mind can choose to actually time travel through memories or through fantasies, so through reality of the past or through the illusion of the future. So if your mind gets stuck in the past, you will start remembering events that happened that you cannot change anyway, but those events can create some stress and sadness because you always think, I could have done it differently, I should have done it, or I should not have done it. This is the beginning of sadness. And a deep stage of sadness for a long time, it can cause depression. So basically, according to yoga, whoever is trapped in the past is at high risk of like being depression. I take the example of my mother. When I lost my father, she could not accept it at the beginning, and it took some time for her, maybe 6 months, a year. And then she started falling in depression because she started realizing that she could have done this with him or say that or whatever things went into her mind. So the difference between where your mind is in the past and where your soul and body are in the present, keep on moving, will determine the depth of despair, basically. So if you don't deal with sadness before it gets to depression, if you don't deal with depression to early stage, at some point you will have to see professional, have probably a medical support, because it starts to change the endocrine system balance into the brain. So all your hormone will start to be into a biological disorder, and it gets really dramatic at some point. So to avoid that, we have this technique, and we're trying to bring the mind back to the present moment, which is the same with the future. All the way around. So if your mind anticipates on event that didn't happen yet, you live in illusion, in fantasies, because you don't know. No one knows what is going to happen in 10 minutes, in 1 hour, in 10 years. But still, your imagination will start focusing on things that could happen negatively. And this is what we call the uncertitude. And this will create fears. So fears of what if this happened? What if I lost my job? What if I get sick? What if my retirement doesn't? We all go through that, yeah. And this accumulation of fear, it's creating the anxiety. So depression, past, future anxiety. So the only peaceful place, it's the present moment, the serenity, bringing your mind at all time with your body and your soul. How? That's the question. Using your breath, using the free tool and always available tool that human has. You know, it's not the phone, it's the breath, because if we stop breathing, we die. So as long as we're alive, that means we can breathe. And just, you know, doing some simple exercise, focusing on inhaling, exhaling, inhaling, exhaling. Just by doing that for a few minutes, it will like bring back whatever your mind is, past or present, to the focus of the present moment. So it has two things. First things, it will remove the focus of the mind. So the mind will have to come back immediately with you at the present moment. So it will distract you from the memory or from the illusion of the future. Second thing, it will have this medical and physiological impact by increasing the amount of saturation in your cell. So by breathing better, you're going to have a higher level of oxygen. It will reduce the oxidative stress. It will act as an antioxidant because the oxygen will start irradiating all the free radicals. It will provide pretty much a better activation of your lungs. So all your organs, internal organs, will start having a better function just by simply balancing the level of acidity and alkalization by having more oxidation, so more oxygen. You will start to feel physically better. So the benefits of just breathing and just being mindful are tremendous on your mind, on your emotion, and on your real physical, biological states.
How long should you breathe for? And does it matter how you breathe? Because there's about, like, there's a whole bunch of box breathing, and breathing through your nose is better. And like, yes.
I guess there is about 2,000 pranayama technique, like 2,000 breathing.
I thought there was like 20. Okay, there's...
No, I think there's much more. I've worked with the pranayama specialist. He dedicated his life to breathing. So he's a German guy who actually lived in India. He lived like a monk. And there is good technique. There is dangerous technique. There is, without going too deep, I don't think you need any special training to start with. At least to start, just being mindful. Just say, I inhale. I exhale. I inhale. Exhale. See, I'm already taking your attention and my attention inside my breathing. So we don't think about anything else. This is to start with. After, of course, there is many, many ways. And I'm happy to share some of them. The main one will be the abdominal breath, hands on the belly, inhale belly out, exhale belly in. This is just to relax the diaphragm. This is good if you having an anxiety crisis. It's usually shrink your solar plexus and your diaphragm gets so narrow that you feel like you can breathe. So you can actually not breathe from your lungs because your lungs feel a very strong pressure. So use your abdomen instead. Look at the babies when they sleep. Only the belly is moving, not the chest. So that's one of this. You have also the rib cage opening when you try to divide different sections of your breath. After, I encourage everyone to try yoga, maybe to join my class. I make sure that we do breathing exercise in any class because there's as much technique as way of breathing, you know. There's something that can be interesting for the mind is to learn how to hold breath, but not hold when we full, because we all know that. When you take a deep inhale, we hold and then we count. I will recommend people to try to hold when they're empty. Oh. Exhale completely and hold. And wait until, you know, you really physically need this inhalation. It's like reverse apnea. It will, how can I explain it easily? It will condition your brain not to panic, you know, because when we panic, we feel like... See, we have this short breathing when so because we feel empty and we're not used to be empty, but it's actually good to be empty. It give a break for a few seconds to pretty much all the system. So if you get used to be empty, at next crisis or next anxiety, you'll be fine. You will not crave to do this. You know, like it seems like you're going inside water and then you're just waiting to go out to take your breath. You know, so this will not happen anymore if you are used to be empty and to be fine. Staying empty. I can stay empty for like quite some time because I'm practicing every day, you know. So
nose, because it does seem like that I read a lot about parasympathetic nervous system and nasal breathing.
I make it simple. The nose is not here to decorate the face. It's here to, you know, this is my teacher saying, you know? No, it's 99% through the nose. There is specific exhalation. We never inhale through the mouth because honestly, I guess, I'm not sure. I'm sure some people will know better, but to my understanding, it doesn't really match with the functioning of the lungs. It needs to come through the nose, but definitely exhaling through the mouth, it's benefic, especially if you stretch. there's something, I don't know if I created, but something I speak about to all my students that I call the fed up breath. You know, we all have this ability to, I just let go. Like I tell them, when you stretch, use your fed up breath and you'll see your body will start opening up. The fascia will start to relax and start to reach deeper. So then imagine every time you exhale, you go to bed after a long, tiring day and you lay down. What everyone does. It's a long day. No one does. You're going to explode. You know? So this is the only way, I guess, to really deeply accept. So if we have it as a reptilian, as a reflex, as a natural way to do, I guess, exhaling from the mouth here can be benefic in this case. But 99% will be through the nose. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And men and yoga, where are we at in 2021? Are men coming? Are they filling your classes? Or because I know guys who just won't touch it. They're still saying they're not flexible. Where are we at?
Okay. I want to believe I have a positive impact, at least locally, for men to don't feel intimidated or less intimidated joining class. But yeah, there is more men, definitely. And it makes me very happy. I feel less lonely in the class because for a few years I was the only man. I guess when they get to know me, they know my story. They know that I didn't want to do yoga. They know that my wife insists for me to do yoga and challenge me. And I didn't want to wear leggings. So I was like, do I really need to wear leggings to do yoga? I said, no, yoga is deeper than what you think and it's harder than what you think. So I took the challenge and it really hooked me up. I was like, wow, this is really challenging things. And then after doing more classes, I started to feel awakened, feel like all the benefits of yoga. So keep in mind, yoga have been created by men for men. And for like, 100 years in India, it was a typical men practice. You know, you can see all the Vedas or all the old texts, Bhagavad Gita, or all the illustration. It's usually men. The gurus are men. There is, I don't know, any woman guru, maybe more modern, but if you go from like Patabis Joyce or Iyengar or Patanjali, or they're all men, you know. So that's the westernization of the yoga. It's maybe more a feminine things, you know. I think it has been appropriated by not necessarily women themselves, but I would say more by the industry, you know. Maybe more brands will find that women are a better customer, so maybe it will be more profitable to like promote it and like target women. But the thing are changing. The men are customers as well, you know, so they buy also a lot of stuff, and so maybe it can be a door for them to start doing some activities. I have a lot of bodybuilder, I have a lot of crossfitter, a lot of runner, football player, a lot of athletes. They need to stretch, and yoga stretch is one of the best possible stretch, you know. So I have my two classes. One, I call it active stretch and mobility. I didn't put the word yoga for people to understand that we're going to stretch and move most likely. So if it's you, if you're a man, it's okay. No one will make fun of you because you're doing yoga. You're actually stretching. Yeah. And the other class, I call it warrior flow. So it's more vinyasa. Also, I don't use the word yoga. I use the word flow, which means like it's a cardio high intensity class. So yeah, hopefully we can talk again about it next year or in 2 years. And hopefully the class will be half-half. For now, I have, 20% of men in my class.
In the West, I think it's higher now, but it's interesting that people are taking yoga out of the class to try and attract people. Now, I tell my single male friends that it's a great way to meet women. I don't know why more men don't go to yoga just for that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have some of my friends, they understand that, and I see them in all my classes. I don't think they care so much about yoga. I think they're happy to belong to the community.
Leave alone a guy in you. Okay, so that's really interesting. And just one last thing, I know you've got to go, but I'm interested in, a lot of people are leaving their jobs. COVID really brought things home for people. I feel some people... I'm hearing more and more who just saying, I'm going out on my own. I'm doing what I want. Like, life's short. You've done that. So do you have any words of wisdom for people who are thinking of doing it?
That's nice of you to ask me words of wisdom. I don't know if I'm wise enough to share wisdom, but I can share at least my experience. I would say I feel I was one of the pioneers of this movement in Dubai because, you know, I did two MBAs. I was working in corporate. I was an entrepreneur. All my friends were in a very high position as well, and they didn't understand why I'm able to give up everything I work for something like yoga, because they see the narrow picture, you know. I didn't left everything for yoga. Actually, yoga came to me a little later. I left everything for my well-being, you know, because I was not happy. As I said, it was a very complicated situation. I went through some kind of burnout and stuff like that. So I just figured out that, why am I doing all this, you know? Why are we here as a human and all these existential questions? So I have no answer.
Yeah.
And I guess this is the most honest answer that anyone can say. Why are we here? No one knows. If someone told you we're here for that, this is his belief, but you know, there's no fact about it, you know. So we all permanently moving to try to survive and have a better health, better condition, a more comfortable life. And for me, what missing was the development. I was not like developing myself intellectually, not developing myself emotionally. And whatever work I was doing was rather destroying my health instead of allowing me to feel stronger and better. And so this was my true calling. My true calling was to take care of myself as a human and as a person. And this is how yoga came to my life. And this is how I decided to share this and try to make an impact. I don't want to influence everyone into leaving the job. I guess it's a very personal decision. And I am working, you know, I'm an entrepreneur now. I just do things in a different way. I do things, I avoid like toxicity, anything that turns into either like toxic relation, either like toxic project, anything that doesn't develop me, I'm trying to stay away of that. And this is maybe the only advice I can give to people. I mean, you're worth it, you know. Don't think that you are trapped. You're not trapped. It's hard, it's complicated. It takes courage to move on. But see, rather than looking for salary, now I'm looking for clients, you know what I mean? I'm trying to have this freedom of movement. I'm trying to see, I don't know, I never found this, maybe you can help me, I never found this exact translation in English, but in French we say il a un travail et il a un métier. So he has an occupation and has a job, you know what I mean? So for example, the baker has il a un métier, he has a know-how, it's not just a job, you know what I mean? So this is what I felt. I left my job to have not an art, but like a craftsman, to do something with my hands, with my mind, with my head, and to make an impact. So this is for me the switch I did. It's not about leaving corporate for something else. It's just I see myself as a baker. I see myself as a potter, as someone who produce something from a talent that I'm developing as I'm getting older. So it's a mix of skills, a mix of learning, of sharing. And I do that through yoga. I do that through mental health. I do that through help people feeling better. But anyone can do it according to their passion, according to their skills, according to their will. And it's okay to work in corporate. I know a lot of people, they're very happy. You know, I don't think corporate makes you sad. It's yourself, how you experience it, you know. But definitely, being happy is important.
And if you are sad or you are anxious, you're saying, and you're a guy, you're saying, if you talk, acknowledge it and talk about it, it will get easier.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it depends who, you know, you always need to have some people that you trust. And especially in this case, it's important because it's like you're opening a part of you, something very intimate. So if anyone makes fun of you or anyone makes feel like it's not legitimate, I think you'll feel hurt, maybe more than, you know, just the regular things. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, If you want to feel better, you have to work on yourself. If you're not ready to share it with someone, you can share it with yourself. Basically, just talking to yourself to the mirror, that can be a way, and try to analyze why you feel like that, what is wrong, and how can you fix it, what is in your hands, what's your mean, available mean that you have to start making a positive impact for you not to feel this way. You can do it by go and run outside. You can do it by climbing mountain. You can do it by sitting in lotus in your living room with a hot tea and some burning incense. You can do it by, I mean, there is many ways of meditating. And remember that before the mobile phone, meditation was daily and usually takes place in the restrooms every morning and every evening when you had a time for yourself without anything that can actually stimulate your brain. You were just like, you know, having more time. So I kind of believe that all this stimulus, all this comparison, everything that is exposed to us through Instagram or through Facebook or all the social network, it's actually taking us away from spending time with ourselves, which is okay. You know, I don't think it's bad. I just think it should be balanced, basically. So just make sure that you disconnect your phone. Just make sure that you have some reading time. Even one page, it's already something. And just make sure that you just go out and walk for 5 minutes, sit in a park for 10 minutes, feed the birds. I don't know, like all the things that all the generation were doing that we don't do anymore, you know? Doesn't mean that we need to go back to the past. We can't. Just need that maybe there's some things in there that can help us, you know, feeling a little bit more distracted and reconnect. Remember the meaning of yoga? Unity, reconnection, union. It's all about staying at the present moment with your mind, your soul, your body. So any activity that allows mindfulness, I guess this is something that really needs to be done on a daily basis, even for 5 minutes.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Anne-Marie.
I look forward to your TED Talk.
That's it for this week. If you liked the podcast, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next time on the Live Healthy Podcast.